Hello, Spacers. From Austin, Texas, I'm Christopher Schmidt, and on today's show, I'm talking with Ari Stiles, my partner at Environments for Humans. E4H produces dozens of virtual UX front-end design conferences every year, as well as the CSS DevConf coming up this October, deep in the heart of Texas. Some show notes as to where I'll be hosting the AccessU Summit. AccessU Summit is a one-day, one-track virtual conference about advanced web and mobile accessibility issues. We have great speakers covering a lot of topics from the law and accessibility to a crash course on accessible tools to make your job easier. Learn more and register now at accessusummit.com. Also, CSS DevConf is a conference that tackles CSS and much, much more. SAS, PostCSS, JavaScript, React.js, and just a whole lot more. The call for papers wraps up April 1st, no fooling. So please get your session in before the end of the day on Friday, April 1st, 2016. So check out more at cssdevconf.com. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Telejet, T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T. As always, thank you for subscribing, liking, and telling others about Non-Breaking Space Show on iTunes. If you want to set it and forget it, have the show sent to your email inbox by signing up at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. Find show notes and links at nonbreakingspace.tv. Now, on with the show.
All right, so what's been up to you?
I'm doing some. Are we like really recording right now?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize. Okay.
So what are you doing right now?
Okay. So this week I've been doing tech checks for a responsive web design, but we have a lot of returning speakers who already know how everything works. And so today is my day to contact all of them and remind them that, yes, you do remember how everything works, don't you? That's my memory of things anyway.
Oh, okay.
We'll see. We have a lot of returning speakers that have, you know, are either A, really familiar with online presentation, or B, have done several of our events before. So they're kind of in the know.
What is the difference or differences between online speaking and normal speaking at a conference?
The biggest thing that I have a lot of people have as a hurdle for getting over is they're very used to speaking to a room full of humans when they give a presentation.
I hope so, right?
Yeah, exactly. Not getting all Silence of the Lambs on us. But with a few exceptions, I think now because we have more people on distributed teams and more remote offices, telecommuting, that sort of thing, that we've got, a lot of people are becoming familiar with maybe to presenting to just your team online and it being more like a discussion. Mm-hmm. And so that has helped me as someone who trains people in this a great deal because there are very little differences there. Those folks get used to online presentation pretty quickly because they've had a similar primer. But for a lot of people who present, they are very used to human feedback in the form of faces in the audience, which is kind of funny to me because we go to a lot of tech conferences, you and I do, Christopher, and I noticed that at a lot of them, people have their laptops and/or devices open and are taking notes. So a little part of me is like, you're used to people looking back at you? I'm used to seeing people looking at their devices, but...
Yeah, it's like they put up this wall. My laptop's open, so I have this wall, and so...
Yeah. And it's so so disparaging for some speakers that I know that there are some conferences, like Blend even, that like insist people put their devices away. But I digress. So we've got a lot of speakers that are really used to that human feedback of having a sea of faces out there listening to them. And so that is not something that they can visually see when they are presenting online for us or for other online conferences. And so I have kind of a few different strategies that I talk people through, especially for the really outgoing people. Right. That, really, really need that, the affirmation of, you know, like another face or another voice out there.
Right.
And so there's a few ways around it. But just in general, we are social animals, and we are, you know, no matter how much you meditate and detach and all those sorts of things, we tend to need some form of feedback.
Right.
You know, even if you don't need approval all the time, you do need feedback.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the first time I spoke at an online conference, it was with the head conference, which is like the HTML right. tag head conference.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asked to give a presentation. It's one I had done numerous times beforehand, and I had some really good jokes in it. So I was really proud of that one, that one speech. So, and so I knew where the jokes were because I've done it before. And since it was an online conference, people had keyboards, you know, they can like type or like, you know, enter in comments as we go. And I didn't know anyone was talking. And it was kind of weird for the first moment. But once I hit that first joke point, mm-hmm. well, I don't know what it's called, joke mm-hmm. point or whatever. But I know once I landed that joke,
mm-hmm.
or that funny antidote or whatever, and people will start laughing like oh, LOL or haha in the actual chat room, I knew A, people were there listening,
mm-hmm.
and two, it was going to be smooth sailing. And so when I hit the other points, that, you know, other funny moments in my presentation, that they were with me throughout the whole entire thing. So so it's really, so I felt like if I didn't have those things, I know it would be kind of awkward for someone new to speaking online, that it's you need that kind of like, are you listening? Hello, knock knock.
Right, right. Yeah, I think, and we keep a chat room going for hours, and then you know we also have the Twitter feed and that sort of thing. So yeah, you do have that, you know, feedback that, you know, we encourage people to not get too hung up on the chat room, but at least if you see it scrolling by or something like that, you have some idea that there's some, you know, feedback or activity going on around your mm-hmm. talk. But mostly I talk to people that are planning to speak, and if they're feeling a little strange about it, you know, I just remind them that we're here, we're listening, we're excited to hear what you have to say. Otherwise you wouldn't be a part of the event, right. You know? And, also I tend to, we have a backstage presenter chat, you know, that I try to encourage them with a great deal.
Right. The back channel.
Mm-hmm.
The presenter's back channel.
If you want. Yes.
But also, yeah, cause like, I know there's lots of distributed teams, but they have to give like, you know, stand up meetings and whatnot. But those meetings are usually like a couple questions answered here or there, or if they've gone into more details, it's they're having like a telephone conversation. They're not, you know, stringing together a presentation. So it's to work without a net, so to speak, without human interaction for so long, it could be kind of,
mm-hmm.
kind of weird. That's why we try to humanize Advice for Humans as much as possible. Like we have the chat room, we watch a Twitter feed and some of that. We try to make sure.
Right. And yeah. just trying to keep it fun.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, but, besides online stuff, we also do, on-site conferences. So we're planning the, our October event, CSS DevConf.
Yes.
On the road. And so, our call for sessions, wraps up pretty soon. So I wanted to.
Oh, next Friday. Right.
Yeah. Talk to you and have you on the show and just talk about what people, can do when submitting papers. And it's not just for our thing, but you know, it's kind of timely for us, but for CSS DevConf, but for other conferences out there too. So if they want to submit papers to other events
right.
around the world and stuff like that too. But I do want to say, like, I do want to preface it with the story that ever since we've done, we've incorporated double blind voting. I think this is from day one, right? We've incorporated
mm-hmm.
double blind voting for our call for speakers for DevConf. It was our test run conference, and we've been
with
it for so long. Is that you know, ever since we've been doing that, we've had a kind of a speaker Q&A in our conference, and it's like a one last chance to ask a speaker that you saw any questions or, you know, give comments about anything that you may have witnessed in one session. You ask another speaker in another session, you know, like, or just about, you know, our industry or what have you. And I don't think we've had one where, not one time where someone comes up and says, like, how can I be like you and speak at the next CSS DevConf? right? Mm. It's always been every conference that's come up.
It's huge. I mean, it's almost to the point where I'm thinking that, you know, if we should just offer a a session on preparing, you know, if you plan to submit for the following year. And I mean, I am really peripheral in, you know, I see those submissions for us, but I really think that that you tend to like handle them more, you know, and work with the voting more and that sort of a thing. But just in general, I think, you know, conceptually, you and I talk about it a lot. And the, yes, the double blind voting takes care of a lot of things. And by double blind, for those of you that aren't familiar, we take away the name of the person and we take away the name of their company. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you actually go to vote for a CSS Dev Conf idea, and we should have voting open later this spring, you're voting for the idea instead of think, you know, and I mean, you know, I know we all like to think that we don't have biases, but it, we do, whether we realize it or not. And so we kind of take that guesswork or wondering about that by just saying, here's the idea in case, you know, if you have any preconceived notions about gender, whether you realize them or not, guess what? It's not a factor in your voting. And same thing for employers. If you feel a certain way about enterprise employers versus freelancers or contractors or all that sort of a thing, you know, all of that information is removed. Now, I think, you know, that sort of thing is valuable if you are hosting an all enterprise conference or all freelancers conference, but we're hosting something that is for people who work with CSS and for people who work with all of its front end friends. And so that covers a spectrum of people, whether you're contracts or working in the enterprise. And I think, you know, they all have something to learn from each other. So, yeah, I appreciate the double blind voting. I love the results every time. And, we only, get around and in there and kind of mess around with them if there's too much of the same thing, right. You know, like if too many of the exact same type of subject, get voted in, then we kind of have to go in there and weed it out a little bit. But again, it's usually just by popularity, right. You know.
It's like how many Flexbox sessions can
you do? You're right, exactly. Or like one year it was like, how many sessions can we have on selectors? I don't know. Yeah. Realistically.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I love double blind just because it just brings so many new voices.
Yes.
Into the mix. And so and it's people that we've never would see before. Like I think our kind of example that we always state is Rachel Neighbors showed up for the first one, CSS DevConf. And
neither one of us had ever heard of her before. Right. She had a really great idea, you know, and then she told us later that it was something she didn't even have a presentation for, but she'd always wanted to research. Right. And so she used her submission and being accepted as a chance to research that topic and put together presentations on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has been, you know, fast forward 4 years, 5 years, and it has been great for her. She's seen the world, you know, talking about the subject. So
yeah, that's, you know, and it's a testament to just working hard.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I just love the fresh voices angle in general, because a lot of times, especially with new conference organizers or just conference organizers in general, when they're getting, you know, whether they're getting started or, you know, something, they're dealing with some challenges. One of the challenges that they kind of will put aside sometimes is really searching for new and unusual talent. They're very, you know, it makes sense. We're all human beings that we're going to talk to our friends first and ask them to be speakers, you know, if they happen to be speakers. And so because of that, you know, sometimes you can end up with the sameness kind of across conferences, where it's kind of like a bunch of people that kind of know each other within all one social group, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you can go to like 5 or 6 conferences and see the same lineup of people every year. And we're working hard to avoid that. And I think because of it, we end up adding some new voices to the mix when it comes to, you know, the thinking on CSS and on front end.
Yeah, it's technologies change and people who work on it change, or like, you know, have fresh ideas from everywhere. That's the beauty of the internet. So
yeah.
And so what I want to do is, you know, try to answer that question that we always get at CSS DevConf, and or, you know, what will it take for someone to be a speaker at an event, right? And go across the chasm, if you will, if there is such a thing as a chasm, and like from attendee sitting to speaking at a podium. And so, and there really is no, because like, there's a couple of words of advice like that I always, you know, as a speaker, is that one, the collective knowledge of the audience will always be smarter than the speaker. Mm-hmm. And so like, there's someone, you know, the whole entire audience knows the answers to the questions you're proposing, unless you're revealing some sort of like statistical analysis that you've done like 5 years of research on, or
right, you know, or something that's never been heard of.
Yeah, exactly. So someone can help you out if you get stuck, and that's cool. And then also, I think a lot of people get stuck with the imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah.
And so that's like a big thing. Big with us. So it's something that people have to deal with. So, like, what are your thoughts on like imposter syndrome?
Well, I think it's a human nature, mm-hmm. and that it's what was the opposite one that, oh gosh, I want to say bloviator syndrome, but I know that's not real. But I mean, most of the population is afflicted with some level of imposter syndrome. And also, you add into that, there's so many different things that you can pile on, because public speaking, most people are more afraid of public speaking than they are of death.
Yes.
You know, and so there are so many factors there that hold people back from saying maybe something that they really need to say. You know, I mean, if it's a technology that you're working with, and you know, you found some ways to make your life easier, maybe you're able to leave work 30 minutes earlier than your cohorts or something like that, but still get your work done. Guess what? You are doing something innovative, and you probably should be talking about it. Right. You know, and so even though you may not be an authority among your team members, or you know, that sort of a thing, you're an authority to somebody. You probably have something to share that's going to help somebody. And so I encourage people to think of it that way, to stop comparing so much in terms of maybe the people in your team or in your everyday life that you encounter that are very comfortable always talking about what they've accomplished, when really, if you put it down on paper, maybe you've accomplished just as many things. You're just not talking about it as much. You know, so some people just get really comfortable with the idea of talking about things. And so I think there's a little bit of culture involved there too, because some of us are raised with or are in a culture that encourages you to reflect and talk about your experience after it's done. Okay. And I encourage people to just get into that mindset. Even if you're not going to be a public speaker, there are other ways that you can do it. You can blog about your experience or how you solve this problem. You can keep a journal that you refer back to. I think you've made this joke, and I've heard a few other people say, hey, you know, I was trying to figure out how to solve a problem, and I searched it, and the answer came up a blog post that I wrote 3 years ago. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so even if you don't have a blog, you could have a database or something where you keep track of, you know, your versions and the way that you solve problems and that sort of thing. And so, you know, I personally would encourage you to share it with the world. But even if you don't, I think that reflection teaches you so much and gives you some idea when you look back at it a year or two or three later, gives you some idea how far you've come, and that can help you overcome things like imposter syndrome as well.
Right. Yeah, that'll definitely help you out with your if you have like a bad day, just to look back at what you've done. I mean, I think Chris Coyer always says that. You know, we've talked to him, and he's given keynotes before, and where he says that the best moment to blog about a technology or a technique is right after you had that breakthrough and you figured it out. And then that way you could put into words what you just found and learned. And so that's because the inspiration is right there. That's and that goes back to even when I was learning guitar, right, in the guitar lessons, is that you know, the music teacher would say, like, oh, if you get inspired for a song, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, you write that song then and there. You don't wait for it until it passes. You know, you go with it until that moment's gone, because that inspiration or that feeling that you had, it's not going to be there. You can't go back in time and pull it back. So that's kind of what I've been trying to do lately. Is, you know, I've resuscitated my blog from.
I love that word, resuscitate.
Yeah, I was just like, you shall live. And
life.
Like, and it's letting go of perfectionism too in some ways.
That's a huge one.
Yeah, so like my blog typography sucks right now, and I have to live with that for a while. And so I haven't really gotten there. And like, even though I just talked to Zell for this podcast about typography before, and he was some great ideas, I just haven't had time to implement them yet. But it's been great just to be able to blog some new ideas that have percolated when I come up there. So just trying to get into the rhythm of blogging. And I really want to say, like, you know, just you talked about sharing with the world with your ideas and what you've done. I think it's just, I try to just by blogging every day, or trying to blog every day about something, you know, even though it's someone else might have known about it, but just putting it into your words. And like showing people what you know, and the idea is like that one thing isn't going to be great, but if you get a whole year of ideas, of small ideas, you know, they just pile up.
Well, then, just in general, you also find your authentic voice as a communicator if you exercise that muscle regularly.
Most definitely, like the blog posts I've been trying to push out recently are just taking forever to get out the door.
Yeah,
and then once you've trying to find that rhythm, and you know that rhythm I had for that TSS cookbook. You know, I think it's almost there. I almost have it back. It's like, oh yeah, that's how I did it. Which is great, because I was supposed to be writing like two books,
right?
In the next few years. Definitely encourage people to blog. I think that's the number one thing. Like, and you don't have to have your own domain name or whatnot, but there's Medium, which is awesome. So just to have out there. So what did you say?
Well, the other thing I was going to say is that just, you know, during my years, I was at South By for a while, and then we've been working with speakers and putting together conferences for several years on a nuts and bolts level, meaning, you know, once you get past all your fears, or you're, you know, feeling confident working through your fears and your imposter syndrome and all the other things that are holding you back, things that conference organizers love. I've run across a few speakers that have done this, and it is just wonderful. If you have just like one page, an HTML page, you know, if you're a web designer, you probably have a page like this, and it doesn't even have to be public, but that you can send a conference organizer, and it's got headshots that you can download, two or three different lengths of your bio. Mm-hmm. I personally would recommend, like, it's going to sound silly, but a Twitter length one,
right.
because there are some conferences that don't have much space to run your bio, and then more like a 100-word one, and then maybe a 200 or 300-word one, especially if you go to academic conferences, they make a lot of room to run long bios. Maybe if you have a couple of versions of headshots, great. Have a color and black and white one available. I mean, you are just doing a huge service, you know. And then also, frankly, somebody might stumble across that, you know, just in a Google search looking for a speaker, you know, so be sure to use the words speaker, presenter, yada, yada, yada in your descriptions, you know, in your copy on your page, and repeat those words a bit, you know, because someone might just stumble across it as well. But I will just say that as a conference organizer, yes, I'm a little bit biased about these things, but that sort, having all that organized is right. just such a huge resource. And then once you do it, because I've talked to every speaker that has something like this, I make sure I thank them at least via email, if not face to face, because we run into a lot of people face to face. And all of them say, it has made my life easier too.
Right.
You know, so it might seem like a pain. You know, and then also for the bio, this is going to sound weird, but a lot of people get a writer's block when they go to do their bio.
Right.
So what I recommend is just going and grabbing someone else's.
Yeah.
This is going to sound terrible, and change all of the facts of it at first.
Right.
To represent
so
you.
So I invented the internet. I should remove that. I should.
Just, right, exactly. And change it with all the facts about things that you've done and where you've worked and projects you've worked on. And then once you know, it's so much easier to edit something than it is to start fresh. So after you change all of those things, then you're going to see other ways that you want to customize it.
Yeah.
So I am not telling you that you are going to go out and plagiarize somebody else's bio.
Okay, yeah.
I am saying you're going to use somebody else's bio as a framework because it is easier to edit than it is to start from scratch with those things. And a lot of them do follow a pattern anyway.
Right. Yeah, my bio, like someone caught me and said like, you know, they said like, your bio is wrong. It's like, how so? It's just like, I'm supposed to call you Ishmael? Like, what the heck? You know, so.
Oh. Hey, now.
Hey, now. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Tip your staff. Wheat staff.
Hey, I read a thing the other day. And you know what? Segues are for kids. But I forgot to tell you
We're
this.
Without a net, guys.
I know. Hey, I read a thing that Austin passed the 2 million mark.
For
in the city proper for population.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if we have the no vacancy sign somewhere that we could turn on. Okay. But I thought, oh yeah, we're going to run out of barbecue if we're not careful.
We got to take the right steps, people.
Yeah.
We got to prepare for no barbecue. but yeah, so I do want to circle back and say about the speaker kit. It sounded like you were kind of talk about the ingredients for what you need for a speaker kit. You know, you need to have you don't need like a well professional, you know, professionally done photo, but it helps to have a high res one, especially in times of retina responsive images, to have a high retina, you know, high resolution photo or a headshot. You know, in the age when your smartphone can take great photos, there's really no excuse not to have a headshot. I think you don't have to post it on the webpage, but you can have a link to it if you're kind of embarrassed by it or not. You know, have a bio. Some people will have bios written in third person, first person. There's nothing worse than plenty of things more worse than this, but I've had to convert people's bios from first person to third person.
Oh yeah.
On the, you know, and that's just like, oh man, serious. I feel like I'm trapped in English class, which isn't the worst thing in the world, but yeah, it's a nice exercise. But being able to find people on the internet, and you know, so it's really hard sometimes if you want to speak but you're not don't have that one page out there that confirms that you are who you are. It's nice to have that page out there as a conference organizer. It's like, oh, okay, you're this person. And you've submitted this talk, and I can clearly match you up and see who you are and some of that too. And I think in the age where you have GitHub and you can host things on GitHub pages, it's pretty easy. Just have a quick speaker page and throw it together and put all the assets into one page and stuff like that too. And have all your links to your social media if you need to do that too. So I'd definitely do that as a bare minimum. But I think also just going back also to speaker, the cane speakers and the posture syndrome. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's something, you know, I think everyone has to deal with is just that, you know, just because other people have done things beforehand doesn't mean that, you know, what ideas that you have aren't invalid. You know, mm-hmm. just like you're adding your own two cents to it. You know, if you actually, you know, what's your experience is always a great idea to talk about. Case studies are always awesome. I always love yes. case studies, how you solve problems. Because you always get the, this is the my one problem with not my one problem with speaking is that people always say, like, it depends. As a solution.
See, that's okay. So, yeah, this is where we differ yeah. because, okay, and I mean, I know that bothers a lot of people.
Yeah.
I hear you. I have great sympathy for you if you have a problem with hearing it depends. Let me back up and say that. Okay. But first off, it is true across all disciplines mm-hmm. that the more experienced you are,
yeah.
the more you realize the nuance right. of every question that someone asks you.
Right.
So, when somebody says it depends, rather than, you know, jumping on like, oh, I'm so tired of hearing that, I always listen to what's after to, you know, because my first thought is I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and think that they're experienced enough to give me a nuanced answer. Or know about different hypotheticals that I might be facing or that sort of a thing. So stop and appreciate that part first.
Right.
But secondly, if they turn around and maybe the answers are, you know, not really all that nuanced
right.
or only about like their personal experience or something really cynical, you know, that sort of a thing, that's the downer for me. But if they can give me and it's okay to give me a complex answer. I'm like, wow, you're smart. Awesome. You know, but I still, and I appreciate their help, but I still usually have to simplify things for my specific instance. I just appreciate that the person I'm talking to probably has several different scenarios, is experienced enough to have several different scenarios in mind
right.
to know that the answer to my question varies a great deal based on those scenarios.
So the person's, so basically you're saying
mm-hmm.
when someone says it depends,
yes,
the quality of answer depends on what they say. Depends. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay,
so rather than automatically be turned off by it depends,
right.
you know, listen to what comes after
yeah.
and take it depends as this is a complex issue.
Well, I'm not saying it depends is bad. I'm just saying mm-hmm. my thing is like I would like to do at the start of a conference when everyone checks in, just says that everyone's solution to a problem is different,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay. So therefore, we will not use the phrase "it depends." So you sign a little waiver, like a little claim. It's like, okay, we understand. And then when they come in, like so therefore, when someone asks a question that suits their scenario,
you can just I'm not big on banning words, especially when they're that banal.
Oh, yes. you know me. I'm an anti-speech person. So
well, you also don't like history questions either. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see that with no context. Let me put that in context.
It depends on context is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I wanna...
So it depends.
Yeah. You're saying like, no, I hate history is what you just said.
No, you said you hate history questions.
No, I don't like
history. I said history questions.
No, I don't like questions and Q&A when they are, what do you think about the future of?
Oh, that was the future of. I'm sorry. I said it wrong.
So you said like, I just hate history. I need to clarify this statement.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure I love history.
Okay, sorry about that. So, okay, I'm going back and I'm being clear and saying Christopher hates the future of questions.
Yeah.
And I will admit that they are pretty lame.
Yeah.
But I really hate cutting people off.
Yeah, me too. So, but yeah. I will do it if I need to.
Yeah, so, yeah. A lot of speculation questions lead to just really dumb answers about things that we don't know about. So
right, and especially in our industry, it's things changes so fast
mm-hmm.
that you know, if you like 3 or 4 years ago, if you said like we're gonna have JavaScript task runners for front end development or whatnot, mm-hmm. I was just like, what? Are you serious? And so, you know, now we're like, you know, talking about tools, new tools every day, and then like this week, you know, the news item, hot drama this week is how you know. people pulled a node module that people relied on for multiple open source projects. And so people were like freaking out about like, what does that mean for node going forward? So, but yeah, so things happen, things change, but,
yes.
Cool. But yeah, I just want to say like, and also kind of circle back to the imposter thing again, it's just like, everyone feels like that. But you know, if you work in an industry, you have opinions about it and it's okay to share those opinions, you know, with your colleagues. And if your colleagues are interested in your opinions, I think other people at a conference scenario or venue would be interested in doing that too. And there's plenty of articles online. We'll link to them in the show notes about ways of dealing with imposter syndrome. But I think, again, I just want to reiterate, like, I think if you agree, it's just like, if you work in the industry, you can speak at a conference, you know.
Yeah, you know, if you've been here for a while, or even if you haven't, even, you know, if you landed a job, you already have a set of skills or some kind of expertise, right. You know, even just about finding a job. Yeah. One more nuts and bolts thing that I forgot to bring up before when I mentioned nuts and bolts is that Jen Lucas said this about our submission process a few years ago, and I very much appreciate it. And every time I look at the form each year, I'm like, yes. you know, she said that, well, she started off as a keynoter for us. She keynoted the very first CSS DevConf that we had in Waikiki. But she went and looked at the form anyway for submission, you know, kind of just out of curiosity. And she said that it's just a great way to, you know, if you fill in the blanks on that submission form, it is a great way to think about structuring a talk. And so I think that's wise too, that, you know, we are encouraging anyone who's listening, obviously, and is interested to please go and submit for CSS DevConf. But, you know, maybe it's not your year, or maybe it's not your subject. It might be worth going and just looking at those steps if you're thinking about giving talks but not quite sure how to structure a talk. Just looking at the way the form is set up, I think, is a good way of thinking about structuring a talk.
Right. And so I think she's, if I remember correctly, she was talking about abstracts.
Right.
Abstracts and talks. And so,
from that, a lot of people grow their talk and use their abstract almost as the outline or something.
Right. I mean, and that's so, like the original sin of speaking is that if you deliver a talk that's not matched up to your abstract, which is like, people come to your talk, they read up about it and they say like, hey, what is this person speaking on, and if they came in late or whatnot, you know, they read up about it, but if you don't match it up. And so, you know, one of the tricks that we have, if you will, like air quotes tricks, is that for our submission process, you know, as a speaker, when I started out, you know, writing an abstract for a talk is always difficult. And one of the things I used to do is, you know, I would always go to South by Southwest, you know, since I've been going since 2004, at the very least. I may have gone to 2003, I'm not really sure. But I always get a copy of the interactive book, and that had a listing of all the talks that were there. And then when South by Southwest submission process came up again, I would look through and see and research all the talks that made it the previous year. And then I would start trying to find kind of a rhythm to the talks that made it. And South by Southwest is little unusual in that they will actually allow swear words in their titles, and things are a little different than most, but you know, which is, you know, I don't put swear words in my titles, my talks.
They just find their way into your kidding.
I drop so many F-bombs, it's amazing. But that way I could research it. And so I think that's one of the things, is that people can actually research other conferences and see how their submissions, their abstracts look. Sometimes they don't even have abstracts, but what we do for ours is that we just ask for a quick 1-3 sentence summary, and then a bullet point list of the key points that you want to deliver. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and that's it, you know, and some people really skimp on that. Like there's like one sentence, I'll be talking about XYZ, and there's two bullet points. I'm like,
yeah,
that's not
really. Got to think of like 2 to 5 things.
No, it's going to be like three.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, okay. Two things is just like,
yeah,
it's like a garnish.
All right. So, okay. So yeah. two or three things that people are going to walk away knowing after your talk that they didn't know before.
Yeah, because two things are just like, whatever. You know, so it's like, but unless they're like really meaty type stuff. And then even if they're really meaty for like a 45-minute talk, those two things could be broken out into more things. And then that way you could do like the old reporter trick, right, of doing the reverse pyramid trick of like you put the most important part of your news story at top. The first paragraph.
Oh, what you lead with, right?
What you lead with, and then you gradually go to the less important stuff at the bottom. So, but by doing a quick summary and by relying on bullet points, which is I usually have like 6 or so, like a good handful, no more than 7 is like you're more than 7.
Wait, you just told me 5 was too many.
Oh, 5? No, well, no, I thought you said 2 was too many, too few. Sorry.
Oh, I said 2 to 5 things somebody should walk out of a room knowing.
Okay. Well, that was then. This is now. I hate. Okay, I hate history. Sorry. But,
it's Friday.
That way you're not really focused on carrying like multiple paragraphs for an abstract, and that's the problem it really solves is that you don't want to have someone who's new to speaking writing paragraphs about what we're talking about. So, so that's like a really great thing to do is just like ask people, just give a simple summary and then what type of things we hope to learn. And that way they can use those bullet points as the main, foundation for their talk. And so I found that's just a really great way of allowing people to build their presentations, but also set expectations for people who are coming to see your talk. Mm-hmm. So that way they're more in tune.
Yeah, realistic expectations. Are nice.
Yeah, because like if you write 3 paragraphs, you know, your emphasis might be on one point that's buried in the paragraph, but and you spend like 30 minutes on that, whereas you spend, 20 minutes on some other part where the people were like really, you spend like 2 paragraphs talking about or 5 minutes on some other things. Like that. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this gives you some sort of balance.
Right.
So if that makes sense, people were writing the equation down. Email me the equation. And whoever wins, I'll give you a prize.
All right. Well, so for people that are interested in submitting, they can go to cssdevconf.com, and the form is linked there underneath the speakers. And we're accepting submissions through April 1st at midnight. So if whether you're interested in submitting or just curious about the form, you can go check that out. And I will say that it has been really fun for us to do some research on things to do in San Antonio with our evening events. Mm-hmm. Because kind of like New Orleans, San Antonio is, really big on entertainment. So there are a lot of things to choose from. So that's been fun to look at too.
Yeah. So, and then if you're speaking also, there's types of presentations that you can do. There's a technical talk. Or you actually if you want to just do just really deep dive into it, you can do a case studies, like I mentioned earlier, love case studies. You can do super technical where you do even super deep dive. Storytelling is always great. So no matter what you do with your presentation, always have some stories. Demos are awesome, especially like Chris Coyer always said he loves demos, especially on CodePen. So demos are awesome because it helps people see, exactly what's going on and be able to get their hands on the code. It could be an inspirational talk or like a personal talk on how they deal with stuff. So there's lots of things you could do with the presentation. So definitely feel more into it. So what has been your favorite presentation or presentations?
Well, it's hard because I work most of the time, and so I don't get to see very much of anyone's presentation. I will say the one I always get to see is the closing keynote.
Yeah.
And I will say that I think that Dave Rupert really brought down the house this year and said a lot of things that weren't necessarily about CSS at all, but like things that we should be thinking about as an industry. And I thought, and inclusivity, and I thought were great. And then a couple of years ago, I think the reason I got to see this one was because it was the keynote on the second day, was Zoe Gillenwater. And her talk was just so wonderful. And I've always wanted to try to recapture because we had some audio problems in the room that we're recording in. So her recording didn't come out so great. But she talked a bit about imposter syndrome and just in general how, you know, if we're paying attention to the steady stream of, you know, like everything coming at us on Twitter and now Slack and, right. you know, all that sort of thing, that it can feel overwhelming,
right.
you know, because there's so many things that you want to do and try, but you have your actual work that you need to do. And then if you spend all your time at work and then trying out new things and you never leave your desk, then you never get to like spend time away from work, maybe with other things that inspire you. And, you know, she just did a great job of, you know, like, hey, maybe we should all kind of give ourselves a break. Yeah. And, you know, so she talked a little bit about, you know, some strategies for like, you know, making sense of the fire hose of information that's coming at you and, you know, how to use it to your benefit instead of feeling overwhelmed. So,
wow, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are two great talks. So,
yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. That's about it. Any final words about any ideas?
I'll be digging for that Austin's no vacancy sign, I guess, after we're done.
It's in the garage somewhere.
It's in the garage somewhere. I'm in charge of the southern quadrant, so whoever's in charge of the north one is going to have to go hang the one out there. But yeah, I just thought that was an interesting read, and you know, I'm thrilled that so many people are here and that our tech sector is amazing and diverse and interesting and that sort of thing. And then I go and try to drive on the freeway, and I feel differently about things.
Cool. So how can people find you on the internet?
Oh, I am ARI4NNE on Twitter because my name was taken. So I did R-E-N, but with a 4 in the middle. And so there's, yeah, Twitter is how to find me.
Cool. And I am also on Twitter. I'm at TELEJECT, Telejecht. And also you can find me at Christopher.org. Okay, well, thank you so much for taking time out today, Ari.
Absolutely. It was fun to nerd out about conference stuff. And I hope everyone listening will submit or tell your friend to submit if it's not your thing, but maybe you know you've got a friend that will. And I hope to see a lot of people in San Antonio because it's going to be a blast.
Okay. Sounds good. All right.
Bye. Talk to you soon.
Bye.